I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All righty, hour number two on this Football Friday. Sharp Tierney coming up next hour. Next segment, Solomon Wilcots. What's going on as we roll on from our studios, the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. So, hope everybody's having a great Friday. Get ready to jump into the weekend. Big Ten, welcome back. Big Ten, my favorite conference. I know the SEC's better. I mean, the brand of play, style of play is unbelievable. I mean, there is just no doubt about it. And I know the Big Ten's a step slower. I get it. The venue's less vibrant. I don't mean the Horseshoe or necessarily Michigan Stadium, but, you know, those middling, like, Northwestern. No disrespect. I'm going to get myself in trouble here, D. Stop me before I start burying people. The point is, the SEC is the king. Everybody knows that.
Yep.
But I am so thrilled that the Big Ten is back, and hopefully they can do this without a ton of interruption. I know we're going to get to the NFL here, but I wanted to say that early because, you know, the Big Ten is a great primer to your football Saturday with the noon kicks. I love noon Eastern kicks. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is. And they have those traditional, you know, powers that are always in the conversation. Michigan bounced out of it for a while. Jim Harbaugh obviously brought them back, and it's a different kind of drama that comes with his tenure at Ann Arbor. But it's always interesting, and it's compelling. The storylines are great with Ohio State, and even the non-traditional Big Ten, teams that are, you know, kind of flirting with power, like Minnesota.
Yes, yes. You know,
we saw that over the last couple of years.
Yes.
So, the Big Ten is just exciting. It's why I think they fought the athletic directors and the coaches and, hell, even the players. They fought to play this season because if college football doesn't feel right without the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Also doesn't feel right without Michigan every once in a while beating Ohio State. Jim Harbaugh's 0-5.
I know.
He's going to be 0-6.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't see it. You're right. I agree.
Ohio State's just better. All right. So Arizona. Arizona's one of these teams where they challenge your acumen. They challenge your football sensibility. There's always a team, and it becomes a leap of faith at some point. They're not a conventional power. They're not consistently on our radar. You know, beneath the radar, they do some nice things. And if you're really paying attention, you're an astute football fan or follower of the game, you know it. You're not stunned by some early success. I don't think that the nation is ready to take the Cardinals fully serious yet.
No.
Should they be?
I'm going to say yes.
I was hoping you'd say yes because I agree. I agree.
And it's tough because at times, so it's a lot. All this is based on Kyler Murray, who was an amazing college player. He came in, won Rookie of the Year last season. You thought that, dude, I mean, he's little. But Russell Wilson's little. Yeah, but he's little than Russell Wilson. Like, how's he going to get it done? Yet he somehow gets it done. Now, you see it every now and then this year, and it's a little bit concerning. Balls getting batted down when he tries to sit in the pocket and not move it. You know what I mean? I'm not talking about like run out of the pocket and be reckless, you know, trying to scramble all the time, but you got to move your window just a little bit left or right in order to find those seams. He's not doing that as much as he did as a rookie. And you've seen a bunch of balls get batted down. He's thrown probably too many interceptions this year, as opposed to, you know, his trend last year where he was really flawless in that category, the early part. So I think it's all on what Kyler Murray's going to develop into before we can start really taking them seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, they just got to win a huge game. Like, they got to win a game where they're not supposed to win, and they shock us, and Kyler Murray has that day, and all of a sudden we believe in them, and that's when they arrive. I think they're on the cusp of it for sure.
Yep.
Like they're not the easy out. They're not the team that's like, all right, here go, here's the Cardinals. They're a team that's viable, mm-hmm. but they got to prove it still. And other teams, you know, aren't at the prove it stage. The Cardinals yep. are still at the prove it stage.
100% still very much at the beginning stage mm-hmm. of the prove it stage.
Yeah,
they are. A little bit like the Browns. I think the one difference there is that last year we all thought the Browns would pop, and they imploded. And so the Browns have been on our radar of possible relevance now for a couple of years, whereas the Cardinals, they just had the first overall pick 2 years ago, which is why they took Kyler Murray. When you draft in first, you draft in first for a reason. Mm-hmm. Things aren't very good. All right, let me give you a little pop quiz. I know I'm putting you on the spot. I think you'll get it if you take 2 or 3 seconds to really think about it. Excluding the Steelers, mm-hmm. take them out of the – you can't give me them as an answer because that's obvious. The other two defenses that you and I prop up on this show the most.
Yeah, Baltimore.
That wasn't one on my list, but go ahead. Give me two more.
Well, come on, think. Well, Baltimore is one that's just...
I got you.
The Browns are also really good because of the turnovers.
Oh, you're killing me.
That we prop up on this show.
Yeah, that we always, whenever like it comes up, we always really go...
Oh, the Indianapolis Colts.
No.
For sure. But they're number one.
No, I'm not saying that those are bad choices.
Yeah.
One is the Bears.
Yeah, of course.
And one is the Bucks.
Yes. Yes, they're the Bears. Actually, though, I think the Bucks are number one now after the last couple of weeks.
But well, here's what's crazy. What this goes back to the Cardinals, not to take a ridiculous side turn mm-hmm. into a Bucks and Bears. The point being, this is about the Cardinals right now and mm-hmm. how I perceive the Cardinals, or how I perceive them to be coming into the season versus how I see them now, is starkly different. I thought their offense would be a little more explosive and a little less mistake prone.
Yes.
And I thought their defense would be a little more vulnerable. It's yeah. actually the opposite. Their defense is less than a point behind in terms of points per game allowed behind both the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Chicago Bears, two defenses that not only you and I,
yeah.
but most football observers generally laud whenever the subject of defense comes up.
Yeah, it's funny.
Their defense is pretty good.
It is, and they don't have Chandler Jones either.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, you have to give them credit. But again, look, we're an offensive-focused NFL fan base. We like to look at the offense. This is why when you talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we talk about Tom Brady and, oh, Gronk finally scored a touchdown and XYZ and yada, yada, yada with all their skill position players. But the reason that they're actually winning so frequently this season is because their defense is so dominant. I mean, they get after you. They stop the run and they get after you with their front four. Mm-hmm. So Tampa is a threat, man, and it's not because of, you know, the greatest quarterback that we've seen, at least of this generation, in Tom Brady. It's because of their defense. Yeah, they do get the credit, but it's because they show it every weekend. I think the Cardinals maybe is a little bit of a West Coast issue here because they're not always on, so we don't see them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to seek it out, and if you seek it out, you're going to see a sound football on both sides of a ball. And as long as they don't turn it over, those interceptions that Kyler Murray has been throwing this season,
yeah,
uncharacteristically, unlike last season, this team is actually well built. Despite the fact that you had your doubts about Cliff Kingsbury, he's done a heck of a job getting this team. Not division viable yet,
yeah,
but the hard out in the division for sure.
Well, he's already dispelled the notion that he didn't deserve the job.
Yes, that's right.
Like that was, and it was something that I was saying.
Yep, I did too. He wasn't successful in college.
No.
How could you believe he's going to come to the NFL and be successful?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a vet on that team, why are you going to listen to him? You say, dude, you weren't even successful in college. What makes you think you can come here and do it? But he has. He's done it. To great success, and he's done it quietly too.
That's what I was going to say. There's no theatrics at the microphone. No. There's no bombastic, bold proclamations. Look at us. Look at me.
I'm trying to even think.
Just trying to win, man.
I'm just trying to think if I've even heard his voice. I can't,
very soft-spoken.
But I can't picture him.
I can. Very soft. At a few press conference. Soft-spoken.
Yeah.
Very soft-spoken. Only time he's not soft-spoken is when he's chilling in that sick multi-million-dollar bachelor pad doing Lord knows what. Remember the fireplace, the water fountain, in the living room.
From the draft.
Dude.
Yeah.
What a life that guy's got.
Yeah.
It's 90 every day. You can play golf every day if you want. You coach at a football, the head coach of a football team. My God, what a setup. What a setup he's got. But even aside from his in-game stuff, which at least on the surface is solid, and they're rarely blown out. They're rarely not prepared to play a game. They enter a game with a plan, and for the most part, they adhere to it. They usually put points up. I don't mean 21 points in the first quarter, but they usually break the ice relatively early in the game, so they're not multi-touchdown or multi-possession deficits down, where they have to kind of get off rhythm and do things they're not accustomed or don't want to do. He's a solid coach. They've got a good quarterback. I will say I did think Kyler Murray would play a little bit better this year.
Me too.
I know, but I was even more – I got to call myself out a little bit. Season's not over, not even halfway through, and I'm not cashing in chips on the young man. But I did think he would be a little more –
trending towards an MVP.
Yeah, that's for sure. And even a little bit more, I don't want to say I don't care about highlights. I care about, do you win and do you protect the football and do you lead and are you healthy and durable? That's what I care about. But I did think I would see some more, highlight arcade type plays to go along with the durability, the quiet, steady leadership and all the other stuff. He's been good. Hasn't been more than good.
Look, they blew out the Cowboys on Monday night, and in part it was on Kyler Murray, but there was also sequences in that game where he couldn't hit the broadside of the barn.
And Hopkins have not been on the same page this year.
No, but they were.
Or at least that game, I should say.
Yeah, they were for two games.
Yeah.
But for the last four, you're right.
Yeah.
Like last three or so games, you're right. And you missed them wide open. They had a corner route. You just missed it. And, and save for that, that Christian Kirk bomb, that 80-yard bomb that he threw on Monday night against the Cowboys. I mean, he started the game like 3 of 15 or something. It was like, what? And he finished, he only completed 9 passes on the day. He still threw for, well over, 200 yards because of the 80-yard touchdown. And he did a little bit more damage with his legs, and they blew out the Cowboys. But that was more about the Cowboys' inefficiencies than it was about Kyler Murray. So, look, sometimes you have a sophomore slump, right? People start to figure you out a little bit. They know what you can and can't do, and they force you into those things that you struggle with. And I think that's what's happening with him a little bit. The true test of his future success will be, how does he rebound from it? How does he make himself that much harder to defend? He's a gamer, man. He's a winner. I like him a lot. I think he'll grow from this and maybe get himself back in that conversation, but about the MVP. But we'll
not
see.
This year. I don't think he
no,
will.
No, not definitely not this year. But maybe down the line,
yes.
he develops into that player once he becomes more proficient and confident and comfortable as a passer, not just a playmaker.
All right, I've got a moronic question. I'm going to ask it. I don't know why this. Well, I know why it popped into my head, because you were talking about the deep shot that he missed with DeAndre Hopkins. Okay, I think I know the answer. I'm quite sure I do, but I want it confirmed. So you have let's say 109 yard shot. Mm-hmm. You grabbing the gap wedge from your caddy. Pros. And, if there's downwind, maybe 109, or in your face, 109 becomes 113. Bottom line is there's maybe each inch equates to 2 yards. But true. As crazy as that sounds, if a pro's got to go 135 yards, it's coming here. Uh-huh. If he's got to go 142, it's coming here. That's actually true. Throwing a deep ball, right, is there any sense of it? He's 30 yards. Is there any sort of computation
That's a great question.
Far his receiver is downfield versus how far I actually have to throw this
thing. That's a great question. I think it's a depth perception thing. You just can tell as a quarterback, when you let it go, when you see where he is and when you let it go, how much oomph you need to put into it. You know who does – Russell Wilson does this best because he basically throws this moon ball that even if it's a little bit too far, it's got a high enough trajectory that his receivers can run underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the receiver controls getting to the ball as opposed to the, you know, the throw – dictating how fast the receiver has to go.
Yep.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah, so, I mean, Russell Wilson does that better than anybody. You know, I've never thought about that, though, but it's something that's just innate. It's like good quarterbacks have it, bad quarterbacks don't.
Yeah, and I figured that was the answer, but when you hear about, you know, scouting reports, young players, they struggle throwing the deep ball,
mm-hmm.
you know, versus guys like Rodgers and even Brady when he was, and I know Brady's made, I think, the second most, you know, big splash plays. I think he's first or second. So he's throwing some deep ones this year, but you know, when he was younger, he would really let it fly more with Randy Moss, et cetera. The guys who just throw – Jeff Blake. There's a name. Jeff Blake used to throw a sick deep ball. And there's got to be some sort of, you know, connection, obvious arm strength, but also muscle memory and also depth perception and all sorts of calculations that I kind of view somewhat as akin to a golf shot based on the sheer yardage or sheer distance. And I was curious if you – I know you're not a quarterback, but – If you knew the answer there, I've never wondered that because it's, you know, I just playing in the street, you see a guy, you just know how far you have to throw it.
Yeah.
But how could you be a great deep ball thrower by just kind of knowing when to? I just thought there would be something more to it.
No,
you know what I mean? More
I don't
math
think so.
Based.
We have to find, next time we talk to one of these, you know, great quarterbacks, we got to ask them because I bet they can't articulate it. I bet it's one of those things that you just can't explain.
Yeah.
You just know it, but you can't explain it.
You know what it is? It's probably more like putting and just knowing when you, how long it's got a leg and not blowing it by the hole.
How hard I got to hit this to make it, you know, settle right where it needs to be.
There you go.
Same thing, just in the air.
I got you. Coming up next. Yeah, definitely. Although it could also be off the green if you have a rough day. Solomon Wilcots, Pro Football Focused analyst. He's going to join us coming up. And after that, we'll get to the World Series. You've got Bueller and Morton tonight. Game 3 tied up at 1, hour 3. Get your pens and pads. Sharp Tierney's going to be handing out some winners. 7-3 last week, so well above 60%. All is good in that department. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, so get in on all the football action with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. I've been telling you about DraftKings now for pretty much since the start of the season. And to add to this week's excitement, week 7, DraftKings has a free shot at millions in total prizes up for grabs. Now, here's all you have to do. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat. Nothing like a good sweat. Fourth quarter. Nah, am I going to win? Nah, am I going to push? Oh, I'm getting blown out. The sweat. You know what I mean. Come on. Like never before. Every run, every pass, every catch means more with DraftKings. It's simple. Pick your lineup. Stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at some scratch, especially if it's millions on the table. And for everybody who's looking forward to the weekend's UFC 254 matches, be sure to check out DraftKings MMA contest. Whole lots of stuff going on over there as well. Simple. Download the DraftKings app. All right, download it. Simple. I got it on my phone. As I bang my phone on my table, very visually appealing. It's great, easy to navigate. Download it and use code Tierney, T-I-E-R-N-E-Y. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. That's code Tierney, T-I-E-R-N-E-Y. Download the app, drop in my name, Tierney, and get a free shot at millions in prizes with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings, making it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. That's DraftKings.com. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney. It's 1-855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, on this Football Friday. Get to the World Series, though. We've got to squeeze in some action on that, which we will do next segment. You know, the window's open. The window is open for the Rays. I did select the Dodgers to win. I did say before the series started, I thought that the Dodgers would wind up winning this rather easily, which really implies 5 games. Never thought they'd sweep the Rays. Too much respect for the Rays' ability to scrap and manufacture, catch the baseball pitch. But, you know, especially after Kershaw's gem, where his whiff rate was 50%, which is insane. best of his career, best since the stat was invented back in 1988. And going into game two, I'm like, oh, I felt, you know, further emboldened to kind of keep riding that train here. But I think that Morton's the perfect – look, Walker Buehler's the ace. I
mean, yeah.
But Charlie Morton, and we'll get to this next segment, is a perfect, perfect pitcher to have on the mound tonight. I don't know, even though other guys have better stuff,
mm-hmm.
if I'm Cash, I feel really good about that, and we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. Tink, what in the world is happening to Michael Thomas's season?
This is so bizarre. It's one of the more bizarre stories that we've seen in a while. Now, we know that he hurt his ankle early in the season, and you know, you can excuse the guy for, you know, having to miss games because he's got a high ankle sprain. Those high ankle sprains can be pains in the butt. We all remember Tua in college, right? He had to have surgery on both of them
twice
to get it fixed, right? Yep. So if you don't treat it correctly, it's going to be a pain. Literally and figuratively, it's going to be a pain. But this seems to be about, like, being a bad teammate. Not necessarily about his health.
Well, he did tweak his hamstring when he came back to practice.
True.
He was clear from the disciplinary stuff, but
true. But
that's been an underlying.
But that's the underlying side of this. And if you tweak your hamstring, unless it's like a pull, and maybe it's a result of his ankle, there's a lot of layers to Michael Thomas right now. And if you are a Saints fan, if you are a teammate, you're in the front office, it's frustrating because he just got paid. There's one thing when,
just got paid.
Yeah.
It's Friday night.
He's paid anyway. Yeah, it is a good one. But at the end of the day, right, you don't want to have that question mark out there that, you know, either you didn't put the work in this offseason or you let it get to your head. Because that's what you start thinking about when all these issues come, you know, start arising health wise and then, you know, teammate wise. Remember, the story was this was 2 weeks ago. He punched one of his teammates. I think that's what it was. He punched one of his teammates and got suspended by Sean Payton. And no, he took responsibility for it. But
hey, you don't really have a choice.
Of course you don't. But still, like, you're the guy, man. You're supposed to be the leader. You're supposed to be. Like, when you're making that much money, people are looking to you, right? Because it just is what it is. Like, when you're making the most money, people expect you to be, you know, one of the most responsible, the hardest working, etc. We're getting some skewed messages from New Orleans right now about Michael Thomas. And it's a shame because he's such a good player. Now, if I tell you about it, he's a great player.
Yes, he is.
And he's the last thing you want to see is him start to go awry in his tenure down there, because without him, they're just not the same team.
No,
I mean, they're still good, but they're not the same team without him.
I, you know, the Saints to me, let me throw this at you here, because most of the teams that we thought that would be good are good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we knew Seattle would be dangerous. We knew the Packers would be good coming off of 13-3. We did think the Vikings would be much better than they are. Yeah. They're a disaster.
No, they should be good. They're just not.
They're not good. We thought the Bills would be good. They are. Mm-hmm. I was lukewarm on the Pats. You weren't loving them either. We knew the Steelers would be good. We knew the Ravens would be good. We thought the Browns would be good. We knew Kansas City would be great.
Yep.
I feel like the one team that has most betrayed, and listen, I've been wrong on a million things, obviously. I'm not trying to get separation to make myself look whatever. I didn't like the Saints coming in. I didn't like him at all. I wasn't buying it. I just didn't like him. I didn't have him going anywhere near the Super Bowl. I thought that the preseason hype on the Saints was really coming out of like residue from seasons past and not applied to what's in front of us now. Is there a team that, even though they're 3-2, it's not like they're 2-3 or 1-4, that was supposed to be great, that really gives you pause more than the Saints right now? I don't think so.
I mean, maybe the Cowboys, BT, but I think in retrospect it was probably an overinflated expectation for the Cowboys. Because it was all on paper, and they lost a lot, even though they gained some, but they lost some. Byron Jones, they lost. Hell, they lost their head coach, the defensive coordinator.
Van Der Esch got hurt in week one.
Yep,
I know he's back, but
What was it? What was the quarter? The backup, the linebacker coach who was Rashard. I think it was Rashard. I can't remember his name. He was a coach.
Oh yeah, yeah. Also did
I can't remember his name.
Did the passing game coordinator.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Rashard.
Yeah, but he left, and that was a big part of their defensive success.
For sure. Good point. Forgot about him.
Yeah, it's probably the Saints, even though it could be the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean, every other team that we expected to be really good, the Steelers, the Ravens, the Titans even, they're all right where they need to be. The Chiefs, I forgot to say the Titans for sure.
Yep. My bad.
Yeah, but I mean, that was a one-hit wonder thing. We didn't know if it was going to be sustainable.
We liked them. We both had them as playoff teams.
True, but I didn't know they were going to be like,
undefeated.
Yeah, I didn't know they were going to be dominant. I mean, not only are they undefeated, they're dominant at times.
Yep.
Now they gave some away to the Texans last week, and that ultimately became a game and had to go in overtime. But there have been moments where they've just you know, they beat up people and they do it old school, which is not what I thought they would be. But they are so good, the Tennessee Titans.
You know, it's funny when you bring up the Cowboys, that's really, as I ran through that and scanned through all the teams and tried to, you know, compare who had elevated expectations and where's the underachievement, maybe not consistent with the preseason positioning, if you will.
Yeah,
I that's the one team that I neglected in my mind was Dallas, and I'm happy that you actually bring them up. The difference would be, now, again, New Orleans is over 500. They're a playoff team right now.
Yes.
They've got a great coach, and if Thomas gets his act together, I mean, they obviously have some upside. I'm not trying to bury them. But the Dallas situation, the one thing that is different is that they sucked last year. Like, it's not
true.
Like we watched them last year.
Good
like,
point.
We built up
good
this
point.
Amazing energy. Oh, you know, Dallas.
But they're
gonna,
the
team. You know, it was kind of like it's a leap of faith.
I know what you're saying.
The Saints, it was more a continuation of what we had already watched.
But the Cowboys are that team that we always want to make an excuse for.
Yeah,
It's like, well, I don't know why.
I
don't either. It's like we lost that guy or, oh, their coach is just bad, right? They have the talent. They should be better than they – like maybe they just aren't that good.
We got to stop doing that. I don't know. And we're not the only ones, by the way.
Everybody does it. Because they – I don't know. They're still America's team. You can't help but want to talk about them even though they don't deserve to be talked about.
I think this iteration, I think different from Romo, even though Tony was very likable.
Yeah.
And still is doing the games, obviously. But, you know, they've taken on, I believe, there was a point – certainly, like with Reggie Jackson when we were kids, the Yankees were hated.
Yeah.
Big free agent, Yankees, everybody hates Yankees. But then, like, how do you hate Derek Jeter?
Yeah.
How do you hate Paul O'Neill or Mariano Rivera? You don't, because they're just punch-the-clock pros who are incredibly productive, especially
and
on the big stage.
And that's all you can ask for.
Bernie Williams, as nice a guy as there is in the sport, or was.
Mm-hmm.
And with Dak, I think a lot of our anti-Cowboy sentiment, like that residual hate from our childhood, a lot of it derived from jealousy too, let's be honest.
Yep.
It was mitigated because we really like Dak Prescott.
That's right.
And there's a positive energy there. And I think even though, as much as we clown Jerry, everybody likes Jerry Jones too. He's a good old country, but Jerry, come on now. Stop down now.
We're not going to have no cantankerous type conversations here.
So, you know, I don't know the root of us glossing over some of the Cowboys' deficiencies, but maybe there's two of them right there.
Yeah, we do
their
it every year.
Their likable and their quarterback's likable.
We do it every year.
We do it.
Every year.
Yes, we do. All right, coming up, Teak, let's get to baseball here. Perfect person on the mound tonight for the Rays, and a pretty good damn answer for the Dodgers as well, and Mr. Buehler. So, pivotal game three, we'll get to that, what to expect. Bobby's update is first, then we'll get back to baseball, then third hour, all football, obviously. Here's the update from Bob. All right, Sunday, it's an NFL on CBS doubleheader. Early games feature two of the AFC's best going toe-to-toe, and Big Ben and the Steelers undefeated hit the road, go to Tennessee to take on the Titans, Ryan Tannehill, and the undefeated Titans, Derrick Henry as well, obviously. Later after that, most of you will see the Niners, who are coming off a nice win if they can continue to turn the season around. Going up against the Pats, the Patriots did not look good last time out. Didn't have a lot of practice time, you would imagine. That'll be rectified. While others will see Kansas City battle the Broncos. We get you set up for all the day's action. Week 7, the NFL Today with JB and the crew at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, Sunday only on CBS. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network on this Football Friday. Sharp Tierney is a little less than an hour away. Top of the hour. He's ready to go, too, by the way, Teak.
What were you, 7-3?
7-3.
Last week?
7-3.
Dude, let's 70% sounds good, man.
70% sounds real good. And let's see, on the season.
Say, what does that make you? It's got to be
35-24-1 on the season. We've got a couple of the 7-3s. You know, it's been, we do what we do here, Teague. No need to, you know, it's what we expect. You know, it's what we want to do. But I think that something else we have to get into before that is Mike McCarthy. When you feel compelled to address rumblings that Jerry Jones is not allowing you to fully do your job, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to that coming up next segment, but that should be interesting. He denied reports.
Yep.
But with reports, there's usually some fire.
Yeah, this was all about Kellen Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Kellen Moore last week. And might not be all copacetic down there, just saying.
Yes, yes, we will get to that. All right, we got a series. We got a series. And, you know, listen, it would have been irresponsible anyway to say that the series was over after one game in baseball. That's moronic. Mm-hmm. But we know we have a series now because the Rays, and not just because they won the game, that's the quick reaction, that's the easy reaction. We now have a series because the Rays' best hitter is officially back in the zone, and
yep.
That's Brandon Lau.
Yep.
When you hit two home runs the opposite way, see, Teague, and you know, I know AJ stopped playing baseball, and obviously your background is football, and I know you go to all the games, but, you know, the ability to get detail-oriented with AJ and Chase and when they're hitting baseballs when they're seven, not as natural for you as a football player. I get that. But when you hear a coach say, even to young kids, hey, you know, keep your hands back, hit it through the box.
Yes.
Especially when you're in a bad funk, when you're not making contact, you're pulling off the ball, whatever it might be. You want to hit it back up the box because that's the easy way of saying, listen, if I try to literally hit it through the pitcher's mound, that means I'm keeping my hands through the zone longer, I'm letting the ball get deeper into the zone, and I'm increasing the odds of making hard contact, okay? And usually, when a guy who's scuffling, usually, when he starts zinging a few, it doesn't have to go over the fence. It could be a line drive for a lefty. It could be a one-hopper to left field, right to the base hit. It could even be a line out. That it could be a double in the gap. When you start seeing opposite field hits from a good hitter who's been struggling, it is go time for that guy historically because now the balls, now he's in a different place, and now he can start turning loose on the inside stuff where mechanically he wasn't there before that. Brandon Lau, if he hit 500 the rest of the series, wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, but it, I mean, how much of this for the Rays, BT, is going to be about Brandon Lau or Choi or any of these other guys? How much of this is going to be about their rotation? Because you were out yesterday, and obviously game two was on Wednesday
night.
And so I talked about it yesterday, and CeCe came on, and the thing that just glared in my mind, BT, and CC kind of confirmed this. CC Sabathia, great New York Yankee, headed towards the Hall of Fame.
He was pretty good.
Yeah, you're right. Brewers too. I think he had a home run when he was a Brewer.
He absolutely did. I think it was upper deck too. He crushed one.
He's got the weight. He's got the heft behind him. He did at the time. Not anymore. He's svelte these days.
Yeah, and he was going on 3 days rest for a while for the Brewers when they acquired him.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
So my point was, like, the thing that jumped in my mind was, God, Dave Roberts just tried too hard to be the Rays. He tried to be Kevin Cash. Let me throw out a rookie first of all, and
but 26 years old, not a kid.
True. But he's a rookie and he's in the World Series. You know what I mean? It's a big stage to throw a kid. I don't know how many innings he pitched on the season this year. Gonsolin, I'm talking about, but he threw him out there, and you knew he was only going to be there for a couple of innings at max.
That guy sweats like me, by the way.
Yeah,
he's a sweat box,
and so it looked like he was nervous, and he pitched like he was nervous, and he lasted one of the shortest outings I think in World Series history. The shortest outing in World Series history.
Yep,
and I also remember Dave Roberts saying, "Yeah, this is going to be a long series, but why?" You know what I mean? So why
give them life?
Not throw, you know, Walker Buehler out there in game two?
Short rest?
I don't know.
I don't love that. CC said he would put Walker out there on short rest?
Well, CC's a different breed. You know this.
Well, that's true.
CC's like, give me a day rest, I'll go back out there. And I think he actually
did
that once.
That's true.
pitched in relief, a day or 2 days later. So he's a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said something interesting. He's like, you want the parade, don't you? right? You want the parade? Go on short rest. And so it was just, I just found it interesting that Dave Roberts tried to do something that he's not great at, you know, bullpenning, whereas Kevin Cash is fantastic at it. And even though, you know, they pulled Blake Snell early, it was probably the right move because he just has his pulse on these guys. I don't know if Dave Roberts is at that level with
He doesn't have to be
unless they're not hitting home runs and they're not manufacturing runs like they did in game one. Then all of a sudden you're in trouble, because once you're down to the Rays, you know, it's fifth, sixth inning, it's over, man.
And, you know, as much as I talk about Brandon Lau, you know, Kiermaier's starting to get that swing looking like it's a little less crooked these days as well. And you know he's a great outfielder. I think that it's fair. And I saw some of the stuff from the show, obviously, following it yesterday. I saw your take on that. I didn't think it was an erroneous. I didn't think it was ridiculous. I thought it was smart. That wouldn't be the first thing that I would point to, but I get it. But here's the thing, too. When you talk about CC, Mike Mussina did this. Pedro did this. Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson did this. Kurt Schilling did this. Those guys from those eras, Steve, they're not – they're conditioned to do whatever it takes to get an out. They're not all wrapped up in the back then the analytics and scouring video footage frame by frame, but just get some ice on the wing, suck down a couple of beers, and if you have to pitch the next night, you got to pitch.
What's my homeostasis? Do I feel the right energies to go back out and pitch again? Shut up. Just go pitch, man.
We laugh at it, and I'm not saying that Walker Buehler can't tap into that sort of old school mentality. But it's important for a manager to know if he doesn't think that a young man is built that way. And a lot of the kids, this is not a knock. This is not me saying get off my lawn. This is an acknowledgement that things are different, and that's fine. I think the game of baseball right now, and I've said it a million times, is far faster and more athletic and more explosive. Now, the things that I miss, I don't miss bunts. I miss a little hit and run action. I think that that's an element. I hate the shift. I do miss, you know, triples in the gap, and I do miss some elements of what we grew up with. But I love the game today. I think that if you throw out, you know, the wrong guy on short rest, not only can it obviously mess him up that night, but then the residual damage later in the series, when and if, and you probably will need that player, maybe mentally he's not the same guy.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So I could kind of see both. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you get banged around because you're on short rest and you're not fully ready.
Correct.
And then you're just ruined. Now you think you can't pitch to these guys.
Yes, you lose mental mojo. You lose your edge. And by the way, as great as Kevin Cash is with this, partly out of necessity, you know, letting Glass now go 112 pitches was a complete contradiction to what he does all the time.
Yeah, you're right.
I didn't understand why he let him go 112. But
yeah, because Glass now, like, when is he going to be available again? You know what I mean?
Probably he'll go, let's see, there's game one and game two off day, game three, game four off day. So he will probably five. He'll be ready for five, I would think. He'll be ready for game five.
He should be. Yeah.
But then again, he's throwing every pitch literally 100 miles per hour.
Yeah, because he's only two pitches. He's two pitches, right?
Basically two. He's got a third show me pitch, but he's pretty much – I tweeted after game one. I said, man, remember when 95-96 was legitimate cheese? Legit. Like, Doc Gooden threw that. Nolan Ryan threw that. A couple other guys threw that. You had a closer, whether it's Mariano or back in the day, guys like, I don't know, Bruce Sutter maybe. Eckersley didn't even throw that because he had a wipeout slider. But you had, like, one guy in the back of the pen that came out and threw gas. Seaver threw 95, 96. Obviously.
I remember when Chapman came up. You were like, dude.
Chapman. Aroldis
Chapman. It's like, man, are you kidding me?
He's annoying me the last couple of playoffs, though. We might have to get rid of him.
He got too jacked, man. He messed up his flow.
Yeah, he did get pretty yoked. That picture of him playing dominoes in Cuba during the pandemic, it looked like it was –
he looked like a football player.
It looked like it was superimposed. It was doctored. He didn't look natural. But anyway, I still like the Dodgers. But boy, Teague, and I know it's harder to quantify this in baseball because with football, not even a quantification, just like a visual. Like, you can see an NFL team running out of the tunnel. You can see You know, if you get a first three and out stoppage, the defense flying, you know, giving each other high fives, jumping on each other off the field, hitting the coaches. Yeah, like you can see energy.
Yeah.
Baseball, you try to conceal it because a lot of times the energy can become a deterrent if you don't channel it properly. The Rays are coming out with it. I'm not saying they had no energy in game one, but the energy that the Rays are coming out with in game three is going to be obvious tonight.
Yeah,
it's going to be obvious.
Yeah, that's what makes this series so interesting, because it's this underdog, even though they're one of the best teams in the AL, if not obviously the best team in the AL this season, but over the last few years they've been one of the best teams in the American League, and we view them as an underdog, and it doesn't make any sense because they find ways to win even if it's not dominant and ideal like we want our champions to be. But I can't put this past them now. You know, after they believe in themselves and they started to hit. You talk about Lau, they just started to hit. They felt like they could put runs on the board against the Dodgers, whereas coming into this series, it's like, man, they're struggling. If they don't pitch well, they have no chance.
Mm-hmm.
Now it feels different.
They're tough, man. They are just, you know, they remind me of a team that I played against in college that they didn't hit home. Everybody was fast.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, even playing first base, and I mean, I was slow as dirt, but even like just getting back to the bag on like a five hopper to shortstop just to take the throw, I got to bust it because he got guys running four flat down at first base. Like when you can run, the pressure, not that the Dodgers, I mean, outside of Turner, you know, a few other guys don't move, but Bellinger's got wheels. If you want, Taylor can move. They got guys that can run as well. Obviously Mookie, but speed is, man, it just makes you do things quicker than you want to and quicker than you're accustomed to. Here's my prediction. I still think the Dodgers are going to win. But remember the other day after game one, Teek, I said, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like we got shortchanged from, you know, one of those pages of the baseball annals that we would really appreciate forever. When the Dodgers put up those four runs, I guess that would have been in the sixth, I think it was.
Yep.
They went four and then they went two. And then the game's over, obviously. You know, you pull Kershaw, you keep the pitches. He was below 80. He had 78. Kershaw, well, that was his night to have 13 or 14 strikeouts, maybe go the distance, at least go eight, scatter three hits, walk one, and just be lights out, historically great, right? Or close to historically, because there's been other, you know, but really great. I think it's going to come back down to Kershaw again.
Mm. Well,
I would not be surprised if the Rays win tonight, and I would not be – then I think the Dodgers could blow him out next game. And when Kershaw gets the ball in his hands again – this is going to be what we've been craving. The final answer on his postseason struggles, and I think he's ready to answer the bell.
Yeah, well, the beauty of, you know, the game one outing, where you wanted to see this epic performance, is that one, and if, you know, now because it's even, doesn't necessarily matter. You're in a race to five, right? And so, race to three, at three out of five. So you're it's different now because it kind of resets that. So the fact that he didn't go 105 pitches or whatever it may have been and get that complete game or close to it and, you know, 13 strikeouts, he should be more prepared and healthy.
He'll be totally prepared.
Right? And, you know, he really had to work to get that first win.
Yep.
It was, all right, he did that with relative ease.
Yes.
And so now the next outing, whether it's game, you know, four or five, probably five. Yeah, it'll
it's
be
not
five.
Gonna be game four.
No, it's going to be five because he already said it. Dave Roberts said it. It's Buehler, Urias.
He'll be ready.
And then Kershaw. He'll be ready.
All right. We shall see. Mike McCarthy's got big issues in Dallas. And he's got another one on his plate today. We'll hit that coming up next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.